This is The Way We Roll, presented by Simon Minty and Phil Friend. You can email us at mintyandfriend@gmail.com or just search for Minty and Friend on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Hello and welcome to The Way We Roll with me, Simon Minty.
And me, Phil Friend.
And this week we've got a couple of bumper stories. We're going to be getting deep into disability stuff. Are you well?
I am, actually. Yes, yes, indeed. Yes, for a change.
Very good.
Nothing to complain about.
That's great. As a heads up, I'm having some building work done, so you might hear the odd banging in the background. But let's crack on with our first story. You're leading on this, Phil. This is about Bristol.
It is about Bristol. In fact, it's about a man called Mark who lives in Bristol. And being sort of fairly brief around the background, and we will, of course, put a link to this in the show notes. But Mark lives independently. He has a bungalow. He has an army of support workers. He's in his 50s. He's been doing this for many, many years. I think around 30 years he's been living independently. And Bristol City Council have had, as have many other councils, and I don't think this is particularly a go at Bristol. And the reason I think this story matters is I suspect it will happen in other councils. Anyway, Bristol, because of the cuts they're having to make, this particular style of living, if you like, is under threat, severely under threat. So what they're saying is, if we can't justify the costs of keeping people living independently in the way that Mark does, by the way, Mark works, he has, you know, the sort of life that most of us expect to live. He goes to see his football team and he does all sorts of stuff.
Can I just add two little bits on there, just for a point of order? He is a disabled man. He's got
cerebral palsy. Yep. Yep.
That article doesn't say he works. It says he trained to be a social worker.
Oh, that's fair. That's a fair point.
It might be, but yeah. I was like, he doesn't say he's got... He's, anyway, yeah. Carry on.
I mean, I'd split heads with you. I think training is work. But anyway...
but it's training. He might have finished his training.
Let's ring Mark. Mark, what's going on with your work?
He might have been discriminated, not got a job yet.
That's true. Highly likely. Anyway, being serious, Mark... it lives a very independent life and is part of his local community, does all sorts of interesting things, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, he employs a number of people to look after him. We shouldn't forget that. He is an employer, you know. So because of the cuts, his service is under threat. And the alternative would be residential care. It's the only option that's really available would be for him to be moved into residential care. Now, for those of us who've been around a while, and I'm one of them, this is really, really scary because what the local authority find itself in is a corner where they can't, there's no wriggle room. They have no alternatives but to slash budgets. Yeah. They've got to look at every service. But this particular series of cuts, because we know that, you know, living independently does have a cost to it for the local authority and so on and so forth. So Frances Ryan in The Guardian, I'll mention that because Frances is a disabled woman journalist. She's a regular contributor to Guardian. We'll make sure the article's shown on our notes for you to read there. She's talked to Mark about the situation. And in her article, what she talks a bit more about is the implications for human rights, certain regulations and so on, like the equality duty on local authorities to consider the impacts of their policies and so on and so forth. Now, just to finish, been a major outcry, lots of interest in this story across all sorts of areas. And we've recently heard that Bristol have decided not to proceed with this in relation, at least to Mark and maybe others. So there is a good kind of ending at the moment, but the possibility and the threat hasn't gone away. They've still got to find the money. Yeah. And this is the reason I think I'm taking this so seriously is that I think Bristol is just one authority where this is going to be considered. And maybe in other parts of the country, people living independent lives in the way Mark is will be not as lucky, i.e. the decision may well be upheld. And then what happens to all those people and their employees and everything else? So that's the, I think that's basically the story, Simon.
A couple of initial thoughts on this, and I'm going to bounce around because I did give it some thought. Now, Bristol's got a bit of a track record with us. Do you remember there was a year or so ago when they wanted all these disability ambassadors, these experts? We value your knowledge, but they weren't going to pay anything.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
And I think you're right, though. This is not unique to Bristol. There are, and in the article, it says one in five councils could be declaring bankruptcy in the next whatever X number of years. And you're thinking, jeepers, this is. So, and I thought there's two levels here. There is, as an individual, whether it's Mark, you, me, another disabled person, the idea that you're going to be taken out of your home and put into some sort of, they were all calling warehousing. We're all
Well,
warehoused.
there were books written about the warehousing model back in the day when I was much younger. So this
70s,
is a
80s.
phrase that has some ooh, scary bits to it.
The idea that you would lose that autonomy is pretty terrifying, and that's because you've got disability. We're going to pack you all in because it makes it a lot easier. I mean, a tiny little bit of me, by the way, and I don't think we were way off this, but some a little bit of the right home with the right support could be amazing. I mean, you get a social life. I mean, there was a line in the article that says he can watch TV what he wants, and if he was in a care home, he couldn't. And I'm like, well, surely you're allowed a TV in your own room. It's not. I mean, I remember I'm being really naive here, but so there's this personal level that is terrifying, absolutely terrifying, and rubbish and horrible. The flip side is how do, and there was a lovely line in the article, sorry, which said, this is about who matters in society. And I think that's bang on. It's how much do we care? And I think that's the essence of it. The catch is, presumably, you just got to find more money. I can't work out a better solution.
Well, I, as you expect, I've been doing some work with this, and I've got a kind of couple of
Ah.
angles. Yeah, I've got one or two
Going to
thoughts
come and
here,
live with
Mr.
you and
Minty.
Sue.
Yeah.
You could be the
It could
Gary
very
Lineker.
welcome Mark anytime, mate. Move in.
You could be the Gary Lineker of the disability world.
Or the Michael Owen and his, I don't know if you've seen the press on Michael Owen's son, who's got a major sight impairment. And
I meant more as in Gary Lineker taking in refugees
I see what
into
you
his
mean. I
home,
sorry,
yeah.
I
And
didn't make
you're
the link.
now the disabled people have become refugees. It's all very dodgy, this.
mind is all over the place. Anyway, listen, 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 listen.
Oh yeah,
So
listen.
I have a couple of thoughts. Firstly, there is this issue about potential breach of the Human Rights Act, Equality and Human Rights Act, right to a private life, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
So there's that. Bit more practically, where are these residential places going to come from? I mean, the care homes, our social care system is on its knees. So where are the marks going to go? I mean, where are they going to be warehoused? Because as far as I'm going to find out, the warehouses are full. You know, there's nobody. Secondly, where are the staff coming from to deal with the additional numbers of people? So Mark at the moment is employing, let's say, five, six, seven people. They disappear because he's now in a care home. Do they all get redeployed into care homes or what? You know, and Mark, of course, sets his own pay strategies and whatever else. There is a shortage of skilled care staff in the UK. So we move Mark in, and what happens to him then?
Obviously, of course, I agree with your general thrust. I feel it's slightly weakened. If you are in a care home, you don't need as many care workers. That's the whole point, isn't it? You won't
Well,
need three or four on a rota. You've got one or two, and they're covering six people.
yeah, but there is an issue here, which is that bath time
Yeah.
goes on
It's when they
between
say.
five exactly, and
Yeah.
get up time goes on. You know, at the moment, Mark can call for somebody and say, I want to get up at 5 a.m. because Bristol are playing away. Whatever. He can't do
Exactly.
that in a care
That's the
home.
independence, and that's
Yeah.
what we've always said. Independence isn't about doing it yourself; it's about choosing when you do it. And
And it's
I've got,
choice and control, that famous disability mantra, choice and control. Really important.
if we head into a point where Jeff Bezos is going to have all disabled people in his warehouses, and we'll be putting in orders as well as going to sleep. That's the model, isn't
Well,
it?
looked after by robots. We'll all be shelved, stacked. Disabled people stacked. Anyway, final point really is a couple of other things. I mean, we mentioned
Still
the
got 2 points to go, so this is not the final point.
well, the chronic now, this is famous. The Chronically Sick and Disabled Persons Act of
Oh,
1970. Do you
1970.
remember that?
Oh, us
Now,
too. I loved
yeah,
it.
it was brilliant. Alf Morris, bless him.
Yeah.
What that did for the very first time was to separate out in residential settings older from younger disabled people. And what Mark faces is the possibility of going into a care home with people with very severe conditions, mainly older people, dementia, those kinds of things. Now, the chronic sick, I know it's kind of been subsumed and all the rest of it, but that established a benchmark which said that's not going to happen. So local authorities have got all these resources, of course they have. So Mark will never be in a care home alongside 80-year-olds who are managing Alzheimer's or dementia or something else. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Plus, if younger disabled people want to listen to a couple of old codgers bang on, they can just tune into our podcast, can't they? They shouldn't
Are
be
you
paying.
now an old codger like me? Have you officially crossed the borderline then?
My friend and a guest on here, Abby, who was, she has visits to hospital, and suddenly, she's a 75-year-old and she's 28 or something. I read that as long as there was the independence, it was the lack of a social life, lack of a love life. The mix, yeah, all of that. Okay, so my couple of points. One is, I was at an event last night, by the way, and we were talking about pay and structure. And one of the people who's a bit, even a bit older than me went, all of this, it's a legacy of Thatcher still. And I thought, oh, blimey, I haven't heard that for a little while. Anyhow, I wanted to, when I look at this, is this actually a legacy of Thatcher? Because she got people out of, during that time, I'm not saying her, but during that time, lots of disabled people, particularly mental health conditions and stuff, we were deinstitutionalized.
Yeah,
And
it's called
now,
care in the community.
that's it. And I'm
Yep.
kind of thinking 40 plus years later, the principle is always right, but there's not the money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, what you can't ignore, and if I were and you were in government, what you can't ignore is the impact of the economic situation that the world and particularly Britain are in. So you've got to cut your cloth and all that stuff. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at, I'm going to be political with a capital P. When you look at what we're spending our money on, I don't know how much a missile costs, but it's a lot of money. And we're lobbing them with, complete abandon into the Yemen and God knows where else. I'm a very highly political point this. Where does that lead? So we've got our priorities right, have we? And I remember, as you do, and so will many of our listeners, the priorities that disabled and older people particularly faced during COVID. I remember what that was like in the sense that people were dying all over the place. They were being, I mean, warehousing was what was going on, put them in old people's homes because we've got nowhere else to put them, all that stuff. And I know there was all sorts of pressures on during that. Decisions were being made that were really difficult to make. I get that. But we do know, as two disabled men, who are very interested in this subject, that disability is quite a long way down the list of priorities for most governments. And
There was a
it doesn't bode well for Mark and me and you and anybody else for that matter.
at the bottom of Francis Ryan's article. I read some of the comments, and there was one that said we're spending on this, that, and the other, and it was very hard to argue with. I mean, there will be reasons, and where we are in the world, and greater risks, and all of that stuff. But you're right; it was a you kind of bloody hell. Is this the priority? And surely there's a better way. Do we? Is there another political party though that represent saying we're going to have less missiles and less,
Well, it's
everyone's saying
difficult.
you've got to spend more on defense. It's such an unstable world. So
Well, but we're finding £300 million to move a few refugees back into Rwanda, aren't we? 300 million quid, I think I read the other day. And again, I know we're sailing close to the wind here, if you'll pardon the pun. But the fact of the matter is, we are making decisions about what we will spend money on and what we won't. And when you look at 12 million-ish people affected by some form of disability or other impairments, you kind of think, hang on a minute, isn't that a priority? There are millions of people. Couldn't we, if we got into prevention? I mean, Mark's mental health, what happens to it? How does he adjust to this totally different way of living? What are the costs to the rest of us for helping him do that? Those kinds of things aren't talked about. It's just a simple decision. It costs 70, and 300 million for Rwanda. That would sort Bristol out and about 20 other councils.
I can't solve this. I remember Jane
Oh, I'm
Campbell.
annoyed now, Simon. I thought you
Yeah.
would have come up with a plan.
Well, the problem is I can't. Jane Campbell's line is, "You're not going to get more. There's a pie, and a pie is so big, so all you're fighting is for a greater piece of the pie. Not there's not a new piece of
Yeah,
pie coming."
that I get.
So what we need is the whole budget or whatever it is, and say where do we split it and what are our priorities. And you're right; these are different priorities. My question was, though, is there a political party that represents what you're saying?
Not that I mean, I haven't, I mean, I haven't read the, well, the manifestos aren't out yet, really, are they? I mean, they're being written and worked on and all that kind of
Yeah, but
thing.
you know
And
instinctively, I don't think there is.
well, the
I think
party that I would normally expect to come out with something like this would be the Labour Party, but they haven't been exactly quick in talking about what they're going to do about social care. Social care's a real issue here. This is what's behind so much of Francis's article. You know, it's about lack of budgets.
And do you
And you,
remember Theresa May in her
I do remember
manifesto?
her. Yeah, she had diabetes. She's a disabled person.
She was also gonna raise the 80 grand social care. I think it was in inheritance and a few other bits, and then it got pulled. I mean, that was the most brave solution we've had in a long time, and they pulled it. I have one last point. I have colleagues who have Down syndrome, for example, and they move out of their family home and they go to assisted living. So they have autonomy, but they also have support. They have freedom, but they also know there's a backup. We celebrate that. Can it not be the same whether you've got cerebral palsy, wheelchair user, whatever it might be, that you kind of go, you could be somewhere where you've still got the choice and the independence, but you've got the backup as well.
Well, it requires that society and his, you know, that the people of this country have to feel that there's greater value in moving resources into areas like that. In other words, that our priorities have to change. I mean, there's an enormous fuss about the state of the National Health Service. There's an enormous fuss. I am reading every day some story or other which says that something's not working. The other day it was about
Well,
dentists,
you're
not
not
enough
answering the question.
dentists.
You're talking about
No,
something.
well,
I'm saying there are great care homes. Could that not be the solution?
no. What's the solution is choice and control. Now, that works for people with Down syndrome in those situations. Other people with Down syndrome might want to stay at home. Don't want to go into assisted living.
Agree with all of that. And they're being forced. So I'm back to choice and control. What I'm kind of saying is that there will be some that this could be the best. I mean, a bit of me likes the idea of one day running your own home, doing all this shit and having to pay for everything. I'm like, oh my God, to be in an institution where I'm getting support, but I've got freedom to come and go. Love
And it
it.
would be a romantic idyll, Simon, if it was staffed properly. You
Yeah.
could get up when you felt like it because
You're
you had your
right.
own personal worker. It's not a bloody hotel you're moving into. It's 80 people living cheek by jowl with three staff. That's the reality.
And that's my point. So, is the solution? I guess what I'm just kind of saying is one of the solutions better care homes?
Well, would be as well as. I mean, for goodness sake, we want
Right.
really good care homes because they are a solution for some people. Yeah, absolutely.
We agree. So my point is, if we just do this blanket, no, everyone's got to live at home and be independent. I don't think that is great if that's not what you want. And my point is, living on my own, just watching box sets when I want, could be miserable and isolating and
Yes.
lonely. And if the only contact I've got is a bloody support worker for 3 hours a day, that's not a life. I
No.
also want to hang out with other people.
And there's an awful lot of non-disabled people living like that.
Exactly.
You know, it's that's not about disability. That's about not having friendships or whatever else it is. And there's my dog barking. I do apologize.
No, I didn't hear it.
No, I think what you need is you need a variety of resources that fit
Camping.
or yeah.
You can go camping, live in the tent for a bit.
I think you're being facetious.
I want choices.
Yeah, and you want control.
I do want that too.
Yeah. I mean, you living in your flat,
Yes.
decide everything. Everything.
I don't want to sometimes.
Well, that's okay.
I want someone else to decide some things.
Okay. Just how much control would you have over your daily life if I
Yeah.
shipped you into
Exactly.
Wandsworth's care home where you
I'm a
live?
bit idealist. I think I'm thinking about social housing rather than a care home. That's what I'm thinking.
There is the other thing, of course, that if we were really able to change the societal view of disability and older people and those kinds of things, that living in your own home and having the ability to go to places where other people are and you can congregate and share,
exactly.
That wouldn't mean you had to move into a residential setting for that. You could be finding that. I mean, we used to have things like day centres and those kinds of things, which have, you know, all sorts of bad press about them as well. But, you know, lunch clubs, people do enjoy going and have a game of bingo with their friends, that kind of stuff. That's not quite the same as making a choice about what time you get up in the morning, what time you go to bed at night, and what you do in between. And in care homes, even the best care homes, that's very difficult to do when you've got to look after a lot of people with too few staff.
And you're right, I want to arrange the bingo and invite people around myself. I don't want it always done for me. It's a bit like when you go on those holidays in the hotels where there is 10 a.m. there's this, 11 a.m. there's that, then they've got the entertainment there. Yeah. I cannot bear that. Yeah. It drives me to distraction.
Well, there you go. So,
well, I think we solved that one.
I think we fixed that. That's good. That sorted it. And there were some real name checks in there. Maggie Thatcher popped up. I mean, for goodness sake.
Oh, I heard it last night, so I thought I'd drop it in again. I'll be speaking about her for a week.
You're listening to The Way We Roll with Simon Minty and Phil Friend. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review or search for us on social media.
So we are going on to another potentially, well, not heated, but big issue. The novelist, Hanif Qureshi.
Yes.
He wrote My Beautiful Laundrette. That's the big one. He's written other things as well. Have you been following over the last 12 months, Mr. Friend?
No, I haven't.
Right.
So this is going to be a voyage of discovery for me and the listener.
About a year ago, it was Boxing Day 2023, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, well, it's now February, so it would have been, January 2022, okay.
Boxing Day 2022, he collapsed. He had been a bit poorly, but this was a surprise, and he had head injuries. It left him without the use of his arms and his legs. I'm reading this. The Buddha of Suburbia and My Beautiful Laundrette were the two of the things he's written. They say he experienced, he's charted his experience with these brutally honest blogs. And I remember reading them to begin with. This is a study of someone who never considered disability, lived his charmed life, and then it hit him and he was furious, beyond furious. And I got a bit furious with him because he was just basically saying, life is crap. I'd rather be dead. I cannot believe this has happened to me. How unlucky am I? What is the point? And the bit I was like, bloody hell, mate, totally get it, but give it a chance, speak to some other people. Anyway, he was guest editor of Radio 4. You know, they do it over the Christmas period.
Yes.
His article was from December, actually, so my apologies. He's starting to come around a little bit. So I have a couple of lines that I wanted to pull out for you, and I wondered what you thought. So
presumably, Simon, just sorry to interrupt you, but he is presumably still paralysed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So no improvement, really.
No, this is his life now.
Okay.
He says he's still the same person as he was a year ago, but he's lost his sense of humour and he's lost his innocence.
Right.
So he's a bit of a grumpsville now. But
then I'd
he
go
says,
well with him then, wouldn't I, really?
For different reasons. he said, but in a sense, I feel I'm much closer to reality. That in a way that we're living in some... Sorry, what he meant was beforehand, in a way we're living in some kind of nirvana miasma until something like this happens. And that's a very telling line. That's my point of view. Just sailed along, didn't give a hoot about this, and then suddenly now he says, I can't make a cup of tea, can't scratch my nose. I've had to learn to make demands. I'm a reluctant dictator. He goes on saying, you find out who your friends are. Some of my men friends can't cope to see me in the hospital, can't bear to be around the wheelchair, think it's going to happen to them next. Okay, last one, and then I'll let you come back. One of the things that happens to you when you're disabled is that you feel less powerful, that you're sort of impotent. You're an impotent god for your kids, but actually, in another sense, you're more powerful. You're incredibly powerful. People are drawn towards you because of your illness. They're fascinated by it. They wonder when it's going to happen to them. You can't say that it does nothing to people. It's very moving, very upsetting, and life-changing for other people around you. I'm sort of the best bit about Hanif is he's a fabulous writer. So, you've got these very articulate, well thought through pieces. He says he does his blog because he's getting a reaction to it, and it's one of the most important things he does. I'm just a bit peeved at him because he's, I mean, this is really wrong of me, but I'm like, you're making out that this is so miserable. You've only had it a year, bud, and you've never cared about this beforehand. Isn't where's a bit of humbleness? Where's a bit of, oh my God, I have been very selfish, or I've been very naive, or I don't know. Am I being mean to this bloke? I don't want someone to have this happen to them, but when it does, I want it to be slightly better.
I get it. I mean, you get it too. This is about loss, isn't it? He used to be who he was, and now he feels he isn't. Very physically, he's not lost his marbles. He can still write. He can still do this stuff that really, and in a sense, he's deploying those skills to vent and share and so on. And in that sense, it's a really helpful thing. But other people who are perhaps on a similar journey, but not the same, he's feeling very angry. Oh, well, that I'm feeling very angry. At least I've got that in common with him. But I think it takes, I mean, I was 40 plus, well, 40 plus before I started seeing disability, and I'd always been disabled before I began to see the nuances and the flavors and the discriminations and the highs and the lows and all that stuff. This guy's at it a year. Cut him some slack, be patient with him. But I think there is real value. I was going to ask you whether he does it like a sort of diary, where, when you look back at a diary, say 12 months after what happened to him, how is he sounding now? And it sounds like he's beginning to sound a bit more positive, i.e., there are upsides to this. There aren't many of them, and I'm still furious, but actually, I am in some ways getting a lot of attention for the right reasons, and it is forcing me to consider what I never thought about before. I'll tell you, as you were telling me that, and my one of my major issues is about assisted suicide, was what would have happened to him if that had been available 3 months after what he did or what happened to him. Because in the frame of mind he was in earlier on in his rehabilitation, if that's
I
what you
think
want
it
to
did
call it,
pop up
I'll bet
early,
it
there
did.
was.
I'll bet it did. I mean, why wouldn't you feel suicidal?
Between you and me, he was so annoying in his description of disability, I'd probably helped him if he said he broke. I thought he was doing such a disservice to being disabled.
That's another reason for us not to have it legalized, so you can't be let loose. Anyone who disagrees with Minty gets done. But being serious, his mental health must have been all over the place. And I don't know if he mentions in any of the articles whether he's getting any support for that, these feelings and how he feels about himself and his change of image and all of that stuff. What's his background? He's a non-English sounding name, because I wonder what cultures he has as his kind of upbringing and so on, and how that might play tunes from a disability point of view.
I mean, I don't know that. I'm sure he's a Brammy, or isn't that My Beautiful Laundry? I mean, he's a Brit. I don't.
Yeah, okay.
I there may be, family background and history, but I don't know if that's
Well,
really.
certainly in the films he's made, there's very strong
You're right.
cultural, isn't there? He talks very powerfully about those issues. So anyway, I just kind of wonder how those tunes get played,
What about this line about being a reluctant dictator?
Well, is he a benevolent or malevolent dictator? Is he a
I don't think they've
dictator?
come into it. It's a relax. You have to tell people to do things.
Yes, you do.
Not
It's an
benevolent
interesting
or.
choice of word, though, isn't it? Dictator rather than manager.
Okay.
I mean, he's got to be very good at management. He's got to get people to do things at the times he wants them. He's got to make sure that those people are available to do it. There'll be somebody on a certain time that he knows will help him with that, but, I think there's, I don't know about dictator because that tends to say that the people are subjugated. They're under your control and power and so on. Well, to some degree, they are, of course.
I can think of two examples. I was traveled last week, and taxi drivers get my scooter in, and immediately they try and pick up this and trying to move it. And I have to say, stop that. Now listen, you're going to do this, we're going to do that, and I'm going to get you to do this. And they're like, oh, don't worry, I'll hold it. And I go, you can let go of it. It's got electronic brakes. You're not understanding. So I have to tell them every step of the way. I always remember your story from many moons ago where you were sitting watching TV with one of your 10, 11-year-old, I think Jack at this point, or I don't know, and said, could you pass me that drink? And they went, yeah, I'll do it in a minute. And you went, no, you do it now. There are other things that you can wait, but this is not an option. I need you to do this for me right now. It's disability related. You do it. You don't decide when you do it. That's a dictator.
No, it could be assertiveness. I mean, I might be a dictator in my family. Maybe I am. But I think it's an interesting word to choose, isn't it? Because I'm immediately seeing him becoming assertive, managing what he needs without him being able to do it himself. But I see why he's saying that. I mean, I get the word, but
it's back to his lack of exposure and experience, because he's gone from I go and get my cup of tea to please make me a cup of tea, and he thinks, well, I'm dictating to everybody now.
Yeah,
it's because he's only done it for 10 minutes. If he met other wheelchair users or other people doing paralysis, he'd be going, oh right. And that's the bit that bugs me. As you say, he thinks he's been this bolshy dictator, but actually he's just gone from having to ask people to do things.
Yeah, Sue and I, our friend Alice Maynard, Sue and I went over for lunch with her, and it was really nice. We had a lovely time. And when we arrived, Alice immediately goes into, because she lives alone, she's very severely disabled, and she says to Sue, right, can you get this out of there? Can you do this over there? Will you get that? And Sue now becomes the kind of arms and legs of Alice. Alice is directing operations. You'll find the milk in there. The things are over there. Put that in that. Sue then's got a cup. What do I do with this? Put it in the dishwasher. Sue becomes arms and legs. She has no...
Home from home.
No, I wouldn't get away with any of that. But it's interesting how that role immediately changed, because in order for us to have lunch that Alice had prepared, Sue had to do all sorts of things, which Alice, of course, would have done herself if she hadn't been in a wheelchair. So now, how did that feel? Did that feel like you were being bossed around, or, you know, controlled or whatever? None of those elements were there, because there's a style to it. It's how you ask, isn't it? Isn't that some of this? It's how you ask people. I mean, if you're paying them, we weren't being paid to do all this stuff. But if I was paying somebody, like Alice has support workers that she pays, then she might have a slightly different approach with them about how things work. And I think you're right that Hareshi is still working out how this works and what his line might be in different situations. Do I dictate or do I ask?
Blackmail, coerce, manipulate. No, I get all of that, and I'm being silly. I'm sensing he may feel like he's been a dictator because he's asking for all of this stuff and he's never had to do it before.
Yeah.
Does the person who's assisting him feel oppressed and the threat of, you know, exile? Or do they like, well, of course, I just get on and do it. It doesn't make any difference. Or why wouldn't I? So,
and does he make a difference between friends, family who are doing things as opposed to professional people who are paid to do things? Does he distinguish his dictatorship between the two?
Actually, and I was in Marks and Spencer's yesterday and I saw a top that I liked, and it was on a very high hanger.
Yeah.
And if I was a dictator, I would have shouted, stop, everybody, get me this. And I didn't. I waited, and this bloke walked past, and I said, excuse me, can you pass me this? And he went, yeah, of course. And then we carried on with our lives. Maybe we need to be a bit more dictatorial.
I think
some disabled people, maybe. That's the confidence, management, all those things you said.
Yeah, it's PDP all over again.
We need him on a course.
We need him on a course. We need him on a course.
Yes.
Because he needs to understand the difference between bossing people around and being assertive.
Yeah.
And, you know, lining them up against walls when they refuse to do what he tells them is not probably the best idea. You know, come on.
I suppose where there is a truth, even for old older experienced disabled people like you and me. Well, maybe you don't feel it. Occasionally I do ask for something and I feel uncomfortable. I'd rather
Yeah, of
not have
course,
to.
of course. Yeah.
And he's doing that every day and he's never done it before.
And I'm not as limited in my physical abilities as he is. I'm not asking for somebody to squeeze the toothpaste tube. His level of dependency is much, much higher than mine. And I see myself as being pretty dependent, but not to the level he is. So he's gone from famous filmmaking, whatever he was, da da
Author.
da da, to not being able to move. And it's happened overnight. And my goodness me, he's doing well to adjust the way he has, I would say.
Oh, come on, you better
Yeah, I'm in awe of
not
him.
see.
In awe of him. Let's get him on a course.
Yeah.
Invite him, Simon. You know
He's
him.
inspirational, isn't he? He's inspirational.
I haven't used that word once.
In his misery.
His misery.
I you almost you but here's my last point, and I will stop now. How do I say this without being mean? There are 1,000 memoirs out there of people that this has happened to. And I'm kind of
Yes.
thinking, why the bloody hell didn't you pick a couple of them up and read it and see what that transition and journey is like? It's like he's charting this for the first time. And of course, it's his first experience, but this ain't the first or the last time that happens to people. And there is a wealth of knowledge and information out there. You know what it is? It's that we've met a couple of them along the way, people who become disabled and then they go hell for leather. And they're overcompensating all over the place. It's like it's never happened before. They're the one, I'm going to change it. And you're like, yeah, I love your gumption. I love your fury. But have a little read and have a little look around first, because there's a lot of people before you have thought about this.
I won't argue with that. What I would say in terms of you have to be ready to read the books. He's going through,
Money.
he's not
Yeah.
ready yet. He won't come on a PDP course yet because he's not
Personal
ready.
development
He's
program.
got to work through, he's got to work through all he's got to work
Yeah.
through all of these
Yeah.
things. And I do agree with you. What would be tremendously helpful would be to have one or two or three or four or five people who can't move chatting to him about how they're managing it and what they've learned on this journey. But he has to be ready for that. And I think in some ways what you're describing, because I haven't read any of this, but I'm going to now that you've brought it up, what I'm getting is a strong sense of him just
Yeah.
getting it out there and seeing what reactions he gets and that then feeding into. So it's okay to feel this then, is it? And actually, there are other people out there who feel like this too. So gradually, I mean, there is, I suppose, a bit of a saying, come on, mate, you'll be all right. It'll all get sorted in the end. Actually, it might not. He might never adjust to this new
Oh
reality.
no, well, yeah, but that okay, maybe you never adjust, but you can still have a good life. His life will be forever different. That's the truth of it. But doesn't mean to say it's a bad life.
I knew a 17-year-old girl. I'm talking many years ago. We were going riding stables. It was pony riding for the disabled, and myself and my mates all
Riding
used to go.
for the
Anyway,
disabled types, it was called.
it was riding the disabled, and one of the girls that looked after the horses and prepared them and all of that was thrown by one and broke her neck. She was flown off in a helicopter. She was tetraplegic from that point onwards. And all of us, every one of us, went to see her, went and talked with her. We were all disabled, but maybe not quite as seriously as she was. And in the end, many of us stopped going because she was so difficult to talk to. She could see absolutely nothing about the future at all. And it got so difficult that most of us withered on the vine and stopped going. My friend Graham never did. He kept on going, but she never changed. And I remember her mother, who obviously was devastated by what had happened, fed that feeling. They were both depressed together. And it was self-reinforcing and it was incredibly sad. I mean, the irony of it, you're helping disabled people and you end up as a disabled person. But she was very, very young. And you might have thought, that she would make adjustments, as many others do and have. I've never forgotten that. And I think it didn't matter what people did, she never ever saw a positive to any of it. She was just enmeshed in this. Now, it doesn't sound like that's what's going on here with our blogger.
And if he's coming round, I can see there's little chinks of acceptance, acknowledgement, and I imagine, and I'm, how do I know? And you're allowed to feel like this, by the way. I can't judge, and these things have massive impact.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a little bit of a correlation between the two of them, which is that was a group of people over there that I did stuff for, but don't you bloody make me one of them. And that's the bit that bugs me. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You sort of either subjugated us, we were different, we were other, we were less. Now you become it and you're not liking it. And I kind of go, I don't want it to happen to you. Of course I don't. But I'm a bit angry that you're, and it's real wrong. I know what I'm saying feels wrong as well.
Yeah, but it's genuine. You know, I mean, we all wish that non-disabled people would understand what it's like not to be and treat us fairly and equally and all that, but that's not the
I'm
way
wondering
works.
If he's ready to come on the show. I'll drop him a line. I have one little line, and this is my mother's wisdom. So I'm having a kitchen that is put at my height, which for the uninitiated, yes, my countertops will be 60 centimeters high instead of 90. And my sister, because she's my sister, went, oh, bloody hell, it's going to be a nightmare coming around to you. He's preparing food and stuff. And my mum, quick as a flash, said, yeah, for one day a year, you're going to experience it, what it's like. And for 365 days a year, Simon has that the other way around.
Very good. Your mum. I always knew your mum was a wise woman.
There you go.
Very wise. See where you get it from, Simon. See where
I'm
going
to get
Penny
for my mum to have a little meet.
I think you should sack your sister from Gogglebox. That's an outrageous remark.
Anyhow.
That's a great line. To being serious, that's a great line. Brilliant line. Well done, mum, I say.
Thank you for listening to The Way We Roll with Simon Minty and Phil Friend.
I've got a couple of little anecdote-y story things.
Go on then.
I did some work at the Football Association at their
St George's Park.
That's it. Loved
Yay.
It.
Yay.
And I was there early, so they've got a little restaurant cafeteria thing. I went upstairs, got myself a potato burger, a bit unusual. Yeah, it was quite a lot to eat, potato in bread. Anyhow, I went to pay and she went, oh, it's all right, don't you worry. And I went, what? And she went, we'll just pay for the drink and you can have that. Don't worry about the burger. And I went, interesting.
What's your name, Harry Kane? I mean, what's going on?
So I went down and I was doing some training afterwards and I said to them, I can't work out whether I was patronized, as in, oh, little disabled fella, let's give him a free burger, whether that was just kind. Or I just couldn't work out. And I said, you know, there's benefits, but it was also slightly less as well. It's all a bit peculiar. At the break, one of the delegates came over and said, I've been thinking about what you said. And I said, go on. He went, you had an FA lanyard. And he said, all of us as FA staff get free food. And she saw you and went, oh, he's FA, we give him free food. And I went, I need to learn that, don't I? I immediately went for the disability bit, and it wasn't. It's nothing to do with it. So, yeah, it was that little memory jogger that we sometimes think it is one reason, but actually it's not. It's another.
That's great. Great. And that, the moral of this story is if you ever visit St George's Park, get a lanyard. From then on, it's all free.
And I don't know whether I'd have a potato burger again.
It didn't go down well?
It tasted great. It was sort of, you know, had
very
spice.
Healthy. You could have probably played a full 90 minutes.
Healthy? It's potato and bread. I mean,
lots of carbs. A very high carb diet.
And the complete reverse of this, I'm starting to worry about whether I am still disabled. My scooter was broken, Phil. And I couldn't get it fixed and they held on to it for about a week. Now I'm living in my flat where I haven't got a kitchen, I haven't got a fridge or anything like that. I'm really limited without my scooter. I mean, I can't go to the shops.
Yep.
But what I was then doing is everywhere I went, I'd be driving along the street, see a garage, petrol station, and think, oh, pop in, buy a sandwich while I'm on the way, because that's what I had to do. But there was a couple of times I had to go to like a big shop or I was leaving a hotel where I was staying at. I went, actually, the 2 days I was in Derby and I was in Leicester. And I didn't have a scooter. I had my car, I had my disabled badge, but I was walking more than I've ever walked. And I thought, maybe I'm not disabled, Phil.
Pain free.
No pain all the time.
Oh,
I'd have to
God.
stop and I had to lean against things, all
Oh,
sorts.
yeah. Strangers had to hold you up and carry you into shops. Yeah, but you're not disabled.
I had these Skechers, the shoes Skechers,
Oh, yes.
which I believe now are just for people of certain ages and stuff.
Indeed, and you've joined them. Yeah, carry
They
on.
are the lightest shoes I've ever had. So if I'd had to have heavy blooming boots, I don't think I could have done it, because this is like walking without anything on your feet. I could do a lot more. I suppose the long and the short of it, I could walk a bit more than I thought I could. My watch, about 4 days in, went, "Your calorie up burning has gone through the roof. What are you doing?" And in many ways, it was a little nice to me going, you know what? I do have an option occasionally, and I love my scooter, and I adore my scooter, and I'll use my scooter always. But occasionally, I have got an option, and I thought, I should think about that.
Well, there's clearly, from a point of view, and I'm being serious about this, you have taken this far more seriously than I have in the recent past about getting fitter. You know, doing a weight train, going to the gym regularly, that kind of thing. So to push yourself to do a bit more walking is part of that regime, and is clearly good for you, so long as it doesn't hurt too much, being absolutely serious. But the scooter, of course, gives you the option. You can choose whether you walk or not, and you might, particularly on certain days, decide that you want to conserve your energy for the delegates you're going to see at Derby and use your scooter rather than walk and stuff.
Also, contextually, when I went to visit the big store I had to go to, I waited 27 minutes for a parking space
Oh,
because I knew that
God.
I had no option. I had to keep going around the block,
Yeah.
waiting for the bay I needed to open up. So I had to go round, round, round. Eventually, it opened up and I grabbed it and I was in. Yeah, I couldn't park anywhere else because I couldn't walk anywhere else.
No.
So there were limits of what I could truly
Well, I
do.
think on that basis, carrying out this analysis and having had this discussion with the client, I think we could probably say that you are still disabled.
Are you still working at Atos? As an
No,
assessor?
because if you might remember, the assessments were all on the fifth floor and they had no lift. So I
Yeah,
never was. Do you remember that about Atos?
they're testing you.
Okay, I've got a couple of anecdotes. I
Beautiful.
don't think they rival that, though, to be fair.
Well.
The first anecdote is that I'm selling my motorhome. Now, for those listeners who don't know, I and my goodly wife Sue have been motorhoming and caravanning for 40 plus years. Our kids were all in. They hated it, but they all went in caravan holidays. We had some epic moments. Maybe we should do a pod on that. But anyway, I've got to a point now, even with a purpose-built motorhome, where I can't use it properly because I haven't the strength now to transfer and stuff like that. So on one level, this is actually a bit sad because
Terribly.
it's a kind of end of an era and another marker that says I'm getting older and my disability is playing more tunes than it used to. So, but the motorhome's going. So we are putting the money when we get it into the holiday fund and we
Nice.
will be traveling business class and we will be swanning about the universe. No, we're doing a lot of research into cottages and apartments and places that we could stay with wet rooms and all the usual amenities. And the positive is this, there are a lot of them. You know, it's getting better. You know, we did that item with you talking about adapted clothing and so on. And you were surprised at how much there was, as was I. It really is very positive. So that's
This
it's
solution for
sad on one level, but it's encouraging on another.
the fact that there's a lot of supply of these accessible cottages and stuff, is this a solution for Bristol? Hello?
Mark next door to me in a chalet. Yeah, I can see it all now.
Yeah,
Oh, well,
see?
you had him in a tent, didn't you? Poor old Mark and his six workers all in a stand-up tent.
I
Brilliant. With
have.
a primer stove. Brilliant.
I'm going to ask you quite a personal question, which you can
Go on.
choose to edit out. Your grandson is an amazing kart racer,
He
and
is,
there
yes.
was an opportunity to go and watch him abroad potentially.
There still is, yeah.
Now, I've asked you a couple of times through text with the listener, Phil, myself, and another friend, Jeff, of this text group. And I said, should we all go? And basically, because I just thought it'd be a hoot and it'd be lovely to go away with all of you. And you did, and then eventually went, probably not. And I thought, is this impairment and age saying I don't want to go abroad anymore?
It is. It's mainly, there's two reasons. One is that it's very stressful for me and Sue, but particularly her, to fly and go to places where we don't know what the support will be like. Now, I think I have to be very careful here because I don't want to put thoughts that don't work. But Sue is very, she wants to be sure that things will be okay there, you know. So in our own lifestyles, all the disabled people listening to us know this. We have our way. You're going to have a 600 mil kitchen. Why is that? So you can live your life the way you do. My house is the same. It's all set up for me. When I go into a hotel, it isn't. And there are risks then of me falling or something like that happening. And Sue's on her own. She doesn't, you know, she can't lift me or anything like that. So there's that factor. There's the sheer factor of I hate bloody airports and flying anyway because I think they're disasters. This whole idea that it's luxury and it's rubbish, it's horrible. I can't wee on a plane. You know, there's all that stuff. And then I get there and then there's the accommodation and so on and so forth. Going to watch Albi race would be fantastic. And to do it in Italy, which is where the World Championships are next year, and he will qualify for those. And he came second last year. So he is a seriously good driver. I'd love to see him. I have watched him in the UK because I can go to certain racetracks and get home afterwards. So your question's a very fair one. And I think some of it is logistical. Some of it is me being a bit frightened. And I never used to feel like that. I never used to worry about these things. If I fell over, I fell over. Big deal. But not anymore. So, yeah. I think we might still do it. You know, if he does qualify, I mean, Sue feels the same way I do about flying. She hates it. Bloody horrible.
The only thought that I had would there would be, you know, six of us, seven of us. You know, you've got a couple of other disabled men who will be hopeless, but will have complete empathy. We'll have some women around who are able to do stuff. I don't know. There's a bit of me like, we're all going to be in this together. It's not...
I'd certainly go if you could guarantee that we have our own, you know, Sunshine Variety Club van that we drive in, you know, with a driver. And
I mean, I went with four other differently disabled people to New York and San Francisco for work and had to organize every moment of that flight, the transfers, the rooms. And I mean, they were petrified. Two or three of them were petrified of travel. I mean, it was an amazing trip, but. Yeah, well, I knew your hesitation was, there was something, I couldn't work it out what it was. So
I think that's still open as a potential trip. And if we were more serious, if we get serious about it, and Albi, of course, has got to qualify and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that's still open for conversation. I'm not shutting it down saying, no, I'm not doing it. I'd like to do it. Just on Albi, he raced in Orlando and he had 2 weekends racing in the US against people from all over the world, and in between went to Disney World and all that stuff. And he finished second, and he finished second by an axle and 1 point or something, 2 points, 3 points. He was so good there, but he got a 5 second penalty added to the bloke who won the championship in the final race on the final corner. So it seems to be. So the potential, anyway, I'm very proud of
his life. Sounds like Lewis Hamilton, and yet he's 12. It's unbelievable.
Well, they have to get permission. He's classed as an elite athlete, which is interesting because then schools are allowed, you know, for people to miss certain schooling. Right. Now, obviously, that's, you've got to be careful with this because Albi's future may not be about car racing. It could be something else, but he's only 11, so you know he's got a long way to go. But yeah,
don't need to explain it, elite athlete to me. You know that
I do, of course. Boccia and shooting and various other things.
Which way do I go? Is it my brain? Is it my creativity?
Where do you concentrate? Because you know you're talented across so many different.
It's hard.
Events.
It's very, very. I'm stopping this. I think we should go and watch Albie if at all possible.
That would be great. Final point for me. Sue's off to Morocco next week for this kind of annual event. Not always annual, but nearly always,
Just
where she
walking
goes
or
off.
singing?
No, it's singing. She's
Singing.
part of a little singing group. They're going off to Morocco. They're all going to sing their heads off, and Sue will get, I call it respite care. She
Yeah.
gets away from me. But I've said this before, but the salutary lesson is I have to manage all on my own. And
Yeah.
that really demonstrates how much Sue does when she's here. And I don't sometimes notice that. So, but yeah, Morocco.
What have you planned? What's prepped so you'll be able to
Oh,
survive?
15 TV dinners.
Yeah.
15.
Nice.
Mainly bangers and mash. Bangers and mash and beans.
How long is she going
You
for?
know, I'm an absolute Alpen
Of
fanatic,
course.
so breakfasts and lunches are always the same. no, my daughters have already put, I've had a WhatsApp from them saying, you know, Mum's going away next week. Can we begin to develop a care package for Dad?
Lovely.
That kind of stuff.
All
All
right.
right, we ought to bring things to a close. Have we got any listeners at the corner?
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay.
Thank you for listening, good people. We hope you have a lovely time and things are good with you. There's lots of notes, the show notes, so you can links and follow up.
Yep. And if you want to contact us, you can do that on email at mintinfriend@gmail.com or.
All the social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, X. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
This is The Way We Roll, presented by Simon Minty and Phil Friend. You can email us at mintyandfriend@gmail.com or just search for Minty and Friend on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn.